The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into a Thursday, Gary, what the heck's going on?
A lot.
Yeah.
Ford has until tomorrow at 10 a.m. Not Monday, but tomorrow at 10 a.m. We'll tell you why coming up here in just
the
a little bit.
The accuser, not the car company.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Looks like the GOP will push for a vote on this. When will we see declassification? That's a question that a lot of us are asking.
Mm-hmm.
Senate GOP, the Senate has passed a spending bill, no border wall funding in the spending package, and the president quiet on it yesterday. Remember, the president said as recently as 3 weeks ago, no, border wall funding must be included in any spending package. The Senate yesterday passing, I think it was 97-3.
Mm-hmm.
A spending package that has no border wall funding in it. Now it goes to the House. Now, whether they will eventually get to the point of including it, when the House passes a bill and then they go to conference, we will see. But as of right now, there is no border wall funding. We bring this up because the president had said roughly a month ago that he implied that if the border wall funding wasn't in there, not a big deal. Less than a week later, came out and said, no, it's got to be in there, and I'm willing to shut down the government because of it.
Right.
The president said after the last spending bill was done that he would not allow this to happen again in September. But it seems like except for the president changing his mind on that roughly 3 weeks to a month ago, the White House was pretty quiet on it yesterday after the Senate passed their funding bill,
yeah.
which is huge news, which means that mean the border wall won't go until after any funding wouldn't happen until sometime next year with the new Congress.
And this is something McConnell talked about it. I think Lindsey Graham was asked about it about the time the president was last talking about it. And which is something, in fact, it was what spurred the president to come back and say, no, I'm not going to sign it. We're willing to shut the government down with if there's no spending for the wall, no money for the wall. They knew that they're not going to, I think it's been widely known that there was no way they were going to tackle this before the midterms. You got so much else on your plate, the confirmation, the fact that they didn't take the August break. And then, of course, the crazy circus net right now with Kavanaugh's confirmation is enough on the plate. You can tackle everything else after the election. That's going to, it will be something that the president can renew, whether it's in late November or December or January. But the question is, well, first of all, you've got to focus on keeping the House. The campaigning by the president, getting out there and campaigning in these districts is going to be huge. Then he's going to have to, you've got Heitkamp and Manchin on the left trying to keep their jobs, which, goes right back to the confirmation process for Kavanaugh. You've got Ted Cruz in Texas and Hollywood having you believe that Beto O'Rourke, Robert Francis O'Rourke, as we call him here by his real name, has a real chance at winning that seat. Although you and I were talking off the air yesterday at the Quinnipiac poll of likely voters. Now they've moved to likely voters, and there's a 9-point spread with Ted Cruz out in front.
And the Reuters poll said he was up by what? That Beto was up, what, 3 or 4 yesterday?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So and that was a likely voter poll.
Right. So we'll see where that goes, and we'll see what happens when the heavy campaigning and TV ads in Texas start. But the point is that everything has to be focused on the midterm. Right now the focus is on getting the votes, securing the votes for the confirmation for Kavanaugh.
I'm sorry, there was 2 points.
Yeah, okay. And so you have, you know, that process in place. And right now it looks like what was a firestorm that could at least delay the process a few days ago is now quickly going, could be disintegrating very quickly and not be a problem at all. Even Collins saying that she's disturbed, basically, I'm paraphrasing, but she's disturbed about the fact that this was brought up at the last minute and everything else. So that kind of tells you where it is. So you have Heitkamp and Manchin on the left. Can you get those votes, Donnelly and included there with these Democrats?
Well, there was nothing that happened that moved for the that moved the story
didn't
forward
change.
Yesterday, and I it was when. And I like to judge the day by when I, you know, when I get up and look at the news and I went, okay, this is over.
Well, because it's interesting. Yeah. Because
unless she decides, okay, I'm going to testify.
Right. And that would change things. You know, she's going to show up on Monday. And this is basically what Grassley said. So a little over 24 hours ago, Grassley said, look, we're moving forward as, you know, as far as we know, the hearings for Monday, the hearings are still on. And so nothing has delayed the hearings. We're not going to delay the hearings. What he was saying a little over 24 hours ago, Chairman Grassley, was we're going to have the hearings on Monday if she's going to show up. Then during the day today, on Wednesday, he was saying, well, if she's not going to show up, there's no reason for Kavanaugh, as we've been saying. What would Kavanaugh can't respond if he doesn't know the details of the accusation? Well, so it won't happen if she's not going to be there.
And one thing that should be discussed here is that if you look at the fact that, you know, the whole FBI, that's the only thing that was really a story yesterday was the whole FBI investigation. Well,
right.
Number one, as we've said, the FBI's role here, this is a political process that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
It is not a criminal investigation. There can't be a criminal investigation by the FBI because there was no federal crime.
Right.
Now, could they investigate, you know, could they, if the president ordered them to do that, could they investigate? Well, yeah, but it's not going to go anywhere. That's why they've twice now they have refused it. But one of the most important things is because Democrats are trying to give the appearance that this would be a criminal investigation. Then they could say the FBI is looking into it's a criminal investigation. Well, it wouldn't be a criminal investigation to begin with. But one of the most important things about a criminal investigation is who is the first person that's always interviewed first? The victim.
Mm-hmm.
The victim would be the person who you would have to go to first. It is so when Republicans are crying, we want to hear from the alleged victim. And the Democrats first said she needs to be heard, and now it's like, well, she needs to be able to do it at her own timetable. That's not how criminal investigations work.
No.
You don't sit there and say, I was robbed, but you know something? I'm going to delay because there's too much publicity on this. I'm going to delay telling my side of the story to the police. I demand a police investigation. Doesn't work that way.
No.
No matter how heinous the crime is, if you're the victim, you are the one, before they go any further, that the police have to interview first.
Yeah.
That's why if you ever watch Law and Order, mm-hmm. they're always going to talk to the victim. Can the victim talk inside of the hospital?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's your key witness.
Right. And the Democrats are trying to push, well, no, we need to have an investigation. But she needs to be able to just answer questions when she wants. But we need an investigation starting now. Well, you can't have it both ways. The investigation starts with the victim.
Yep.
But it's a political process here, which is, as we have said before, this is why and I disagree with the Republicans calling, you know, for a public hearing. I think now they've offered her she could do it whatever way she wanted to if she wanted to do a private hearing. But the fact is, this should have been done private. This is a political process. It's not a criminal justice investigation. It's a political process to vet a Supreme Court justice. They do a lot of it in closed session.
Mm-hmm.
This should have been something because it's just an allegation with zero evidence, 36 years old, no cooperating witnesses, come up,
mm-hmm.
and therefore it's not a criminal investigation.
Mm-hmm.
It's simply, okay, this is more information that we need. All right, what's the information here? She says this. What have all the other witnesses publicly said? Okay, that's it. Well, nothing we can do.
Right.
And that's where we're at now. But the left seem to be pushing the FBI investigation. It's important to understand how an investigation is done because the Democrats are depending on the ignorance of their constituents. We just scream investigation. The process of an investigation, we're not going to explain. Let's blame men. Well, it's white men, or excuse me, it was men, then it's white men. This is standard operating procedure from the Democrats, and we know it. When you don't have a point, what do? You label racism, you label sexism. Well, none of that has anything to do with any of this. The only thing that has anything to do with any of this is the evidence that exists of whether there was a crime or not. End of story.
And there is no tangible evidence.
No.
None.
Also coming up here in the show, the pot industry pushing to eliminate the word stoner.
But what do the stoners think about that?
I will have to ask. Amazon considering opening 3,000 cashless stores by 2021. You and I have talked about this before, that when this starts happening, it's going to happen quick.
Well, you know, one of the things that's going on is that they're buying up reportedly some of the old Toys R Us locations, and they're buying up some of the other closed retail locations as well, other retailers that have closed. There's a lot of empty real estate out there that they can occupy. And if you think about the way they have structured their entire delivery infrastructure, the warehouses and all of that to get stuff to your doors. Well, the next step is to open a store for things that you really don't want to ship. Right, milk, water, fruit, vegetables, things like that. And this has been on the table for a long, long time. Cashierless, where you walk in and your app basically scans everything. It doesn't mean they won't have workers in the building, but they won't. You won't use a cashier. You'll use your app to shop. So it'll be interesting to see that roll out.
A new study out there, humans are hardwired for laziness. That's all we need to tell the millennials, right?
Hardwired for laziness.
We're hardwired for laziness. Mm. We'll get to that coming up here. Pompeo says we're ready to talk to North Korea again. Mm-hmm. Plus all your calls and comments. We got a great show ahead if you'd like to get in. Lines open now. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio. Toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. So here's how it goes right now. Senator Grassley put out the timeline yesterday and said, I remind you, and he told the lawyers to Christine Blasley Ford, I remind you that consistent with committee rules, Dr. Ford's prepared testimony and biography are due to the committee by 10 a.m. on Friday, that is tomorrow, if she intends to testify on Monday,
mm-hmm.
which means we'll know by Friday, because
right.
if it isn't there by 10 a.m., well, then there is no testimony on Monday, which means there is no testimony.
Right.
Now, is that what's going to happen? Are they going to say, well, we're not ready, we'll have it for you Monday, so we're going to have it Tuesday, or the Republicans going to say, no, we're not going to, or it's going to take a week to put this together. This is what I suspect is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have, later on today, the lawyers say that's ridiculous, that you would expect her to have her prepared testimony done now. We can have it 2 weeks from today. We believe that's reasonable. All the Democrats are going to jump on and say that's reasonable to have it 2 weeks from today or 3 weeks from today, and just you hope to draw it out. That's what I expect to happen later on today.
The word remind that Senator Grassley used is key here. She'd already been told, and so had her lawyers. They've already been told this, that you have a deadline of your prepared testimony. And they knew that from the beginning. They knew as soon as this was scheduled. They were told what it would require. And this is a reminder. And it's a fair reminder, and they're not going to delay it, nor can you delay it. And the Democrats can scream everything they want to. It's not going to stop them from doing it. They're going to scream it anyway. It's not going to happen on Monday. I think we all know that. And they're going to scream that she didn't get a fair shot. That's false. She's got not one but two lawyers, very competent attorneys that could put this together. It was an incident that happened that she claims happened, and it took place over a period of minutes, not days, not a pattern of behavior, but minutes. So her biography and everything else, all of that could be done in a few days. It is reasonable. It is not to delay the process. It is to give her a shot, which, as I agree with you, as you mentioned earlier, that shouldn't be the case anyway, because anybody can come forward with a claim. I don't put it past any political activist or protester to come up with a bogus claim. I'm not saying hers is. I'm just saying I don't put it past that, and we open the door to that. And so that's the problem with having it. But she's been given this opportunity. She has two very competent lawyers, activists, who could put this together and have known since this was scheduled that this is part of the process and this was going to be the deadline.
Maine Republican Senator Susan Collins said she hopes Ford will testify in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee, citing options of giving her account publicly or privately. I hope that Dr. Ford will reconsider and testify before the Senate Judiciary Committee on Monday. It is my understanding that the committee has offered to hold either a public or a private session, whichever would make her feel more comfortable, Collins said on Wednesday night. Ford previously asked for the FBI to investigate her allegations before agreeing to testify. But as we said yesterday, this is a political process, not a criminal justice process.
Right.
And the arbiters here is the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Not the FBI. The FBI is not going to decide to prosecute here. The fact gathering comes from the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a criminal justice investigation. They want it to be a criminal investigation. I bet you if the FBI, if Trump ordered them to do it, they would then call it a criminal investigation against Brett Kavanaugh. And therefore, if a criminal investigation is going on against a Supreme Court nominee, you cannot go forward with it.
Right.
Which would be the next, which if you're talking about how I believe that they would use the what their political rhetoric would be in this case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I suspect that we're going to, it will be more of the grandstanding. And as you mentioned, I think you're right on with that. Well, she wasn't given enough time. This isn't fair. She couldn't be heard. It's not reasonable. It's very reasonable. She's got a whole team of people. Did she need to prepare to talk to the Washington Post? No. No, she didn't. When you have the truth, it's all about, you know, basically at that point, in preparing the statement and your testimony.
Well, her lawyer,
it's clerical.
They prepared when they talked to the Washington Post,
right,
and when they sent the letter.
Yep. For Cobra Electronics, here's your forecast.
Record river flooding will continue across the Carolinas for days, even weeks, as Florence's rainfall makes its way through area river systems. The greatest area for rainfall today, the upper Midwest and northern plains, from just east of Helena, Montana on I-94 through north and south Dakota up through Detroit, so mainly north of I-90, we'll see heavy bands of rain as a warm front pushes through. The Ohio and Tennessee Valley today will be dry, the eastern seaboard drying out after Hurricane Florence, and the west coast will be dry. Finally, from Tucson, Arizona to Tallahassee on I-10, we're looking at a chance of rainfall today, and the greatest amount of rain will be around the Carlsbad area in New Mexico. In fact, we have flood warnings out for the desert southwest in Arizona, New Mexico, and parts of western Texas. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Where is the outrage? Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. You and I are just having a discussion here off the air about that if she doesn't respond by, 10 o'clock tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Friday morning.
This is Ms. Ford.
Right.
Who has made the allegation against Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. That then the vote will take place. Mm-hmm. So let's, vote takes place. He gets in.
Okay. Right.
All right. So now what happens? I did see somebody say yesterday, you'll probably see her on 60 Minutes. And you and I were having this discussion during the break, and you said back to me, but it won't matter because nobody really can even name a Supreme Court justice in this country.
Right.
This was taken in August.
Okay.
More than half of Americans cannot name one Supreme Court justice.
Told you.
Not one. It's a surprising improvement over last year when 57% of Americans could not name a single Supreme Court justice. Mm-hmm. The most identifiable justice this year, Ginsburg.
Okay.
Known to 25% of respondents. Here's an interesting point. More men than women could name Ruth Bader Ginsburg mm-hmm. as a Supreme Court justice.
Okay.
26% to 24%. Older people were also more likely to be able to name a justice. The majority of adults, 50 to 64, and those ages 65 and older, were able to name a Supreme Court justice. Neil Gorsuch, who joined the court last year, 6% of respondents.
How many thought he was Tom Bergeron? Oh, that's the guy from America's Funniest Videos. I know that guy.
As for Brett Kavanaugh, now this is before this all broke out, but this is after he was named. Yeah. 35% of respondents could name him. 60% had no idea who he was.
Hmm.
And, we've been on that narrative here the last, 6 months or so, just what Americans actually know and what they don't know.
Right.
And we do that for a very important reason, because if you get frustrated with the discussions that you see on social media, if you get frustrated with the discussions that you have with your friends, remember, people are not debating and arguing with the facts anymore.
Right.
It's strictly emotion. They have no idea what the facts are. When we talk about Supreme Court decisions, when we start, talking about so many Supreme Court or court decisions, the travel ban, for example.
Sure.
And when you and I first started talking about that in 2017, and I think that's when we first saw, there we were one day. These justices, the separation of powers, three branches of government. You have to understand and the whole day we did it, and it was like that next day where we saw the survey where, 70% of Americans could not name the three branches of government,
right.
Which means if you can't name the three branches of government, you have no idea how our government runs. Which then when people say, I don't believe there is no American exceptionalism. Well, you wouldn't know to begin with because you have no idea what makes this country, how the country was formed, why it was formed.
Right.
How many other countries looked at the United States and said, that's the Constitution we want, which all goes to American exceptionalism.
Mm-hmm. But you might be in the Cuomo field. Nah, we've never really been great.
Exactly, because you have no idea. You have zero idea. Think about this. Yeah. And I think about all the. And look, you and I know a lot of useless stuff. You and I could talk music all day.
Oh, sure.
We could talk movies all day. Believe me, Eric and I know as much useless stuff as anybody out there.
I'm still wondering why Herman Rarebell is no longer the drummer for the Scorpions.
See? Look at that. And everybody's saying, oh, man, I even know Gorsuch before that guy.
Mm-hmm.
So we know as much useless stuff, but and our mind is full of pop culture stuff that we could talk about all day.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not Kardashian stuff, but you know, but a lot of other stuff.
Right.
But still, to not know how the society that you're in, that you have never been inquisitive in your entire life, because I knew about the three branches of government. Wow, Eric, I can't tell you how young I was. I knew how the government was set up from... Now, I had to when I was in Boys, or when I was in Cub Scouts.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm assuming it was at least Cub Scouts, which would have been,
right.
what, eight or nine years of age, yeah. I would have known.
Right.
And so I didn't have to, you know, I didn't have to have a refresher course on it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know definitely by Boy Scouts you had to in order to get the, what is it, the citizenship merit badge. So that would have made me probably... 13, because I got Eagle Scout such a long time ago. I was 14 when I got it. I don't think they allow you to get it that quickly today. So I would have gotten that merit badge between the ages of 12 and 13.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, I knew the three branches of government. And I understood why they existed. And I understood, that's why when I was in high school and my great history professor or teacher, Dr. Charles C. Marlack, was sick and took the day off, and the substitute came in and started talking about that there was no difference between the United States and any communist nation out there, and that's why I was able to argue with her and then get sent to the principal's office.
You started a Cold War of your own.
I started a Cold War and got sent to the principal's office for insubordination for telling her that, of course, there's a difference if you understand, you know, how the government is, you know, how our government is all set up, what the infrastructure is like, and I would have done that as a 10th grader, and I had the confidence at that point to tell the teacher, look, you're full of it. I had no idea, and by the way, I had no interest in becoming a talk show host at that time.
Did you hang up on her? Oh, no, we can't do that. Sorry. I'm ending this call.
No, she hung up on me. Go to the principal's office.
She had you leave the conversation.
It's still one of my favorite stories because people say, that really happened to you? And I said, yeah, and the principal was one of my father's best friends when they were young.
Mm. Yeah.
She goes, what are you doing here? I got kicked out of class. Think about that. Only for what? Were you smoking? Were you swearing? Were you harassing one of the women in your class? Nah, I got into a discussion with the substitute teacher about democracy, capitalism versus a communist totalitarian state, where she said there was no difference, and I said there was.
Mm-hmm.
That pause was the... That little pause there was the principal looking at me going, you're kidding. No, that's... And I believe that's the only class I ever got kicked out of in my life.
Hmm.
So, but it does... I will say that at times it does get maddening because you would just think that people would have just a casual interest about the society that they live in.
I would think that they would want to know what... The Constitution provides for them, you know, what it acknowledges, actually, in terms of your rights. If you know how the government works, you know what protections you have as a citizen. But beyond that, you appreciate what freedoms you have. And when you appreciate what freedoms you have, there is a greater chance you're going to hold those that are serving public servants responsible for their actions. Because what it's become, and this is what you're seeing this week with the Kavanaugh accusations and everything surrounding it, it has become a Facebook, Twitter conversation.
Yes, it has.
It used to be that the lawmakers on Capitol Hill, you know, would look for whatever was going on TV, right? What was the big story? What was trending on TV? What was really making people upset? You know, steroids in baseball. Well, we got to do something about that, right? Right?
Can you believe we actually worried about that at one time?
I know, right? It's like now everybody, here's your free steroids. Don't forget it's steroids night at the park on Thursday. Bring a, you know, soda can and you get free steroids. But the whole thing... And then the whole thing with, you know, with it now is about the social media thing, because so many things trend. And the word trend is a big word. This is trending. Really? Yes, it has like 15,000 tweets. Out of the billions of tweets? That's trending. Okay, fine. And what they do is they latch onto it. But what they try and do here is they're trying to manipulate it like people try and manipulate, like the trolls try and manipulate, especially on social media. And that's what they want now. But they don't, because you don't need to know that it's, people don't know. In fact, they keep calling the whole Kaepernick thing, that's a First Amendment right. No, it's not.
To this day.
Yeah, it is. The First Amendment doesn't provide protection from the NFL. It's from the government. The government isn't involved. The whole thing with, you know, all of this, you know, surrounding it this week, they've got it wrong time and time again. The FBI doesn't investigate these things. They're not going to. It, first of all, it's not a federal crime that she's alleging. And beyond that, they weren't the statute of limitations on this.
They weren't federal employees.
Right.
They weren't federally licensed.
So
nothing.
This is not, again, this is not within their wheelhouse and job description. But they need you to be ignorant on the facts. They know people are ignorant on the facts. We believe you're smart enough, but they believe, the left believes you're stupid, that you're not capable of learning, and they don't want you to learn.
And remember, this isn't Republicans they believe is stupid. This
it's
is Democrats.
Democrats.
If you're a Democrat and you vote for a Democrat, they believe you're an idiot.
They need you to stay ignorant. And
they rely on that belief that you are an idiot.
Well, that's how Ocasio-Cortez wins. She doesn't need to know anything about how things work to win. She doesn't. She didn't need money. She needed viral, something viral. So that's because that right there is a perfect example of my point. They treat the world like social media. We, and I'm not saying conservatives, I'm saying just the average American, we don't live that way. We don't live on social media. We don't live like people behave on social media.
No, we don't.
Social media is more like road rage. You're flipping the guy off because you think you're never going to see him again. You're protected in that big, you know, car of yours, and you're never going to pass by that guy. Then you hit a red light and he pulls up behind you. That whole, you know, attitude of, well, I'm just going to throw this tweet at somebody, and then, you know, somebody blocks you or you block them. And it is kind of that road rage mentality.
Or
many people not even using their real name.
Or it's like a stadium when the opposition team comes in.
Yeah, right.
And you've got people booing.
Right.
Where you would never boo as an individual that person
right.
if you met them.
If they were walking, you know, if they were standing in front of you at the grocery store, boo! Boo! We don't behave
well,
that.
You have the anonymity of the crowd.
Exactly. You blend in. You believe you're protected, and to a certain degree you are for that purpose. But that's the way they're treating it. They want you to believe, they need you to believe in just the emotion of it. And they'll throw out these noble sounding phrases like, she deserves a chance to tell her story, and she deserves a reasonable amount of time to. That's what you're hearing, and that's what you're going to hear, and it's not going to happen. And they'll go forward with the vote, and they'll scream, and once that's over, they'll move on. Remember, last week it was about documents. No, Mr. Chairman, trying to shut it down. It is all using the people and their emotions, and the people are falling for it because they're willfully ignorant. They jump in the fray and don't care to learn.
If you want to get aboard, we do have a line open, 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara. We'll get to more of your calls and comments coming up following the top of the hour. Also, coming up, the latest on the declassification of FISA warrant documents, where that is heading, and the marijuana industry pushes to eliminate the word stoner.
Why?
And drug culture stigmas, because average people who are productive use marijuana now.
Huh.
Well, but that doesn't mean that stoners don't exist.
Right. I mean, there are people who smoke pot and are productive. I'm just joking. I'm just kidding. I'm just joking. That's just my little joke there.
That was good. I like that, didn't you?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Curley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning.
This hour for Freightliner, Run Smart, helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
In other news, we'll get to your calls in just a moment here on Kavanaugh. People want to give their 2 cents on it, so we'll, or more than 2 cents. These are our listeners, so 3. Mm. 3 cents is us. 50 cents, maybe. 50 Cent. The Senate overwhelmingly passed a spending package that delays a showdown over President Trump's border wall until after the midterm elections. The Senate package funds the Department of Homeland Security with continuing resolution that runs through December 7th, but does not provide additional wall funding. Like the Senate colleagues, House Republicans have no appetite for risking a government shutdown over the border wall funding just ahead of the midterms. The Senate overwhelmingly passed a spending package Tuesday that keeps the government running until after the midterm elections by a 93-7 vote. I had said 97-3 earlier.
Okay.
93-7 vote. Senators moved to fund the Pentagon to the tune of $607 billion for fiscal 2017, plus full-year funding for the Departments of Labor, Education, Health, and Human Services. But the Department of Homeland Security and unfortunately, the story that I printed is...
You're going to leave us hanging?
Well, what? No, because I think I know where I can find it very, very quickly here.
Right.
But the department... I got to see if I can find the story here very quickly here.
Right.
But, okay, I think I may have found it. All right, here we go. I got the story here. See, I don't want to depend on my computer going down, so I always make a hard copy. And you know, sometimes, right. And this was one of those that you print up and you go, oh, good, everything's there. And this is one that you go to the second page and at the top and it's cut out.
Yeah, right.
The Department of Homeland Security, which pays for border wall construction, would be funded to current levels via the continuing resolution that runs through December 7th. Funding DHS in a continuing resolution allows Senate Republicans to avoid what promises to be a contentious fight over Trump's signature border wall initiative. Senate Democrats have agreed to include $1.6 billion for the border wall in the fiscal 2019 spending bill, but that figure is far short of the $5 billion that has been sought by the White House. The Senate's new spending package now moves to the House, where GOP lawmakers appear to support the continuing resolution. Like their Senate colleagues, House Republicans do not want to risk a government shutdown. It doesn't make a lot of sense to shut down the government, and we'll fight that fight when it comes, but this isn't the time to have it, said GOP Rep. Tom Cole of Oklahoma Tuesday, according to the Washington Post. I don't presume to speak for the president, but our leadership tells us they've been in constant communication with the administration, and we're proceeding on that plan, so I assume that's the case. Mm. Even the House Freedom Caucus, a group of conservative Republicans closely aligned with Trump on border issues, is wary of shutting down the government just ahead of the midterms. Freedom Caucus Chairman Mark Meadows of North Carolina has said passing a spending bill is a more urgent priority than wrangling over the wall funding. President Trump has floated the idea of shutting down the government to force lawmakers to pony up more money for the wall. Trump told reporters earlier this month he was willing to do anything to secure funding for his border wall priorities. Conversely, he had hinted at a preference, though, for waiting until after the midterms to push for wall funding. He doesn't like Dolan telling the Daily Caller in an interview that he doesn't like the idea of shutdowns. But as we said a couple of days later, as they point out, he said he'd be willing to shut down the government.
Mm-hmm.
After the last spending bill, he said he would shut down the government.
Right.
We're not going to let it have a repeat of this in September. That doesn't seem to be the case. And we didn't think it would be.
No, you're not going to do something. First of all, it doesn't carry any political weight. The whole government shutdown thing anymore doesn't really resonate with anybody. It's not real leverage. You're going to have something else that the Republicans need, or the House needs from you in order to, you know, get up to the table and negotiate on that. The whole government shutdown thing isn't a real threat anymore. Doesn't resonate with people, and it's likely not going to happen. And it's certainly not going to happen just weeks before the midterm. So, put that aside. You move on. You get on with the, let the Senate get on with the confirmation process for Kavanaugh. Get him seated by October 1 if that confirmation does happen. And then campaign in all of October.
Well, let me ask you this. If you're the president, did you ever really want to have the fight of the border wall before? Or do you want to use that as something to rally your base to
go out? In 2020.
Well, not just 2020, in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
We need more support in Congress for the border wall.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the point. The loyal Trump supporter who wants the border wall is not going to stop supporting Trump if they don't get the border wall
now.
Right now.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
No, I'm with you on that.
So
yeah.
So you use that as, you know, because what you tell your base and you tell Republicans, there's no chance of a border wall, and there is no chance of a border wall if you lose the House or the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to happen.
Right.
It will not happen in Trump's first term.
Right.
So if you go through then 4 years of a promise, at that point, it's not going to happen, especially if it will not happen without question if the Democrats win the House or the Senate.
Well, and one thing that the president can still mention it during campaign stops. Listen, you know, we need to win so we can get the wall done. We need to win so we can work on the deal to get the wall done. We need to win. And you can keep using it. It is an open-ended promise. That you don't have to win, as you mentioned, Gary, with your base before the midterm. It's also something where you can you keep that going. If he hasn't done it by 2020, if the money's not there by 2020, I think it's going to be, it could work one of two ways. Either your people are losing great confidence in you getting it done ever, or you renew it and firing up your base all over again, saying, listen, we need this second term because we must build this wall. And I think people would react to that. His core will. So you have this open-ended promise, this open-ended campaign promise. You're still working on it. It's not done. We still have things to do, and we need Republicans to help get it done. You can do that right now between now and November, and then you could probably keep that going. If you don't get the wall done before 2020, you likely could do that during that year.
Let's go to David in Massachusetts about the Kavanaugh allegations and that process. David, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
How you doing?
Very good.
On Kavanaugh, on that whole deal, they should probably just, do a background check on her and her friends and, acquaintances and whatnot. And him and the guy who was in the room with him, his judge or whatever his name is, and interview him and whoever else, just have the FBI do the background thing on that.
Well,
that,
what's going
on? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's just another week. I mean, Garland, they said, hey, you can wait a year.
Well, then,
and you can wait 5 years for Garland, but we can't even look at this for a week. Come on.
What do you mean 5 years? No, it was about waiting for the election for Garland, which, by the way, the Democrats supported.
Well, why don't they wait for this Supreme Court? Because we got a crook in office.
All right. Well, let's focus. Let's focus. You don't want to have a conversation. You don't want to have a conversation because let's focus on one particular issue. And as we have said before, and you don't wish to have a conversation, and that's fine. We understand that's what the opposition is. Mm-hmm. We wish to have a conversation on it. And so if you're going to have a conversation, what we would say to you is, well, what they're saying is that no, what you do is we want her. Remember, she herself never went to any law enforcement agency.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't go to a law enforcement agency in July. She wanted to go the political route, not the investigative route.
Yep.
We're going to have to explain this again here. Number one, it would not be a criminal investigation. Nobody has to agree to talk to the FBI. The witnesses involved in it that exist already have said, nope, they're not going to testify and they're not going to come forward. We've made our statement. That's it. They don't have to talk to the FBI. The only one who needs to be interviewed first and most thoroughly is the alleged victim, because that's what's always done in any type of an investigation. The FBI would simply do a background check, which means they would talk to her and give the information to, because nobody else wishes to talk, they would talk to her, they would talk to Kavanaugh. The witnesses have said no. And so the Senate Judiciary Committee, what they should have done, and this is why you should be mad at Dianne Feinstein, she should have immediately, when she got that letter, said, okay, call that person back and say, you gave me this letter. If you don't want to move forward, please tell me now. Otherwise, I must present this to the Senate Judiciary Committee. If you don't wish to move forward, then we won't. If you want confidentiality, fine. I don't know why you sent this to me, because you're not going to get confidentiality here because you have decided to go through the political process. You never went to law enforcement to make this a law enforcement thing. You wish to help to derail the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh.
Mm-hmm.
So, therefore, the Senate Judiciary Committee is saying, speak to us directly. No filters. Speak to us directly. You're the victim. You haven't been interviewed yet.
Right. Yep.
And she has said, I don't want to be interviewed.
Well, you wrote the letter for a reason.
I'm not ready to be interviewed. Well, then fine. Nothing happens.
Well, nothing happens. We're going to wait around. We're going to stall the entire process until you're ready? No.
Well, no investigation works that way.
Nope, it does not.
You don't say, well, okay, we're going to go on with the investigation anyway, even though the victim says they're not ready to testify. Well, then fine, the investigation stops. Investigation stops, life moves on.
By the way, Feinstein, because, this claim that, well, she wanted to remain anonymous, and Feinstein claiming during the day on Wednesday that via Twitter, that, well, this was about the media leak. Her name was known because the media leaked it. Okay.
Well, who knew?
Somebody
about it?
Leaked it. What do you mean somebody leaked it to the media?
Only the Democrats knew about
right.
it.
Right. Grassley's still looking for the letter.
Right.
So you had that situation where she received the letter July 30th. She could, Ford, could have remained anonymous with the FBI looking into it.
Yes.
She could have Feinstein could have presented that so that the FBI could have looked into it and gone through that process, and she didn't do that. So quit asking Republicans why they won't delay it. Why did Feinstein delay it? Feinstein delayed it a lot longer than the Republicans. So why did she delay it? And she's asking for further delay. She knows that the FBI could have looked into that without divulging the name of the alleged victim.
Right.
She knows that.
In fact, that would have been the only course of action. If she wished to remain, if she had any hope of keeping herself anonymous in this, it would have been, the right path would have been, and Feinstein knows this,
right,
to go directly to the FBI, inform Chuck Grassley and other people that you have this particular letter. If she wishes to, that you call her and you say, are you willing to move forward? Here's how we can, here's, we can't always guarantee you confidentiality for the long haul, but for the short term, we can, the best chance you have a confidentiality is for us to take this and do a background check on this letter right here.
That's the process.
And the FBI talk to you.
Yes.
And talk to Kavanaugh and the other people that are involved in it.
Right.
And that way it remains anonymous because it's within the closed session of the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Why did Dianne Feinstein delay that part of the process? Because they're saying, well, the Republicans, like the last caller, they're stalling this FBI thing. Nope. Feinstein did that. Single-handedly.
Without consulting the other members of the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Right. Ask her why she didn't go to the FBI.
If you want to get in, we do have a line open. Would love to hear from you. 866-90-RED-EYE.
When it comes to proper tire care and maintenance, what can you do to improve fuel economy? Jason Evans is Director of Store Operations for GCR Tires and Service, and he tells us.
Fuel economy is certainly something on the top of everybody's mind. So I think the industry in general understands, beginning to understand the importance of things like air pressure. But just to throw an idea out there that maybe not all our listeners hear all the time, is check your tread depths. Check your tread depths, particularly on dual wheel positions, where tires are bolted together and essentially forced to rotate down the road at the same speed, because for $2 in your local truck stop, you can find a tread depth gauge. Anything beyond 1/8 of an inch difference, or commonly referred to as 4/32nds in the tire industry, between dual positions can really add to rolling resistance. Not only does it add to rolling resistance, it tears up your tires faster, and in a lot of cases, it's a similar condition in terms of a fuel economy as having maybe a brake dragging. That may be a tidbit out there for the listeners to really key in on, because mismatched tread depths on duals can really add to rolling resistance.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley.
This hour for Freightliner, Run Smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
I love the last caller, and I can't let the call go without mentioning how they were talking about Kavanaugh and what the FBI should do and what the role of the FBI is, and he throws in, and Trump's a crook.
We got a crook in the office. We always have a crook in the office for the all of the political populists out there. They're all crooks.
Well, it's just, you know, at that point, you lost your argument. And being in talk radio, that's one of the most frustrating things, that people just, as soon as you get somebody, especially on the left, it's like they're not going to stick on their defense very long when they finally realize it's breaking down and is weak.
Right. Yep.
And that's just the reality of, we've come to get used to it, but we like to point it out when it happens.
Yeah. Democrats in the past had supported delaying the nomination process and the confirmation process during an election year because they wanted to give the people a choice and it could have gone forward if she had won. Remember, there was always a 95% chance she was going to win. And so that's what that was about. Republicans decided to do the same thing. And of course, the liberals, the hypocrites said, no, that's wrong. Well, sorry. That's just the way it is. And that's, they, you know, they always change the rules to accommodate themselves, the Democrats, and they change the standards and want you to forget that they've done that. But they did. And that's why the process didn't happen before. Delaying this over a claim, well, then we should delay every process over any claim.
And that's, as we said yesterday when we started out the show, that's really it. Does an allegation stop the process of a Supreme Court justice when there's no corroborating evidence whatsoever?
Right.
And when you see what happened with Feinstein, again, and that's why it's important to go through point by point what she did to show that, you know, hey, where'd this leak come from? It certainly didn't come from Republicans. They didn't leak her name. And you see the fact that she could have done, at least kept her anonymous for a portion of the investigation, chose not to.
Apologize for nothing. Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Hurley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour for Freightliner, run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal. Drivers, if you want to see a really cool Freightliner, the tough-tested power sled, it's going to be at Road Ranger in St. Robert, Missouri, this Saturday, September 22nd. It's an all-day event. You go to Road Ranger, which is at 22345 Highway 28 in St. Robert, Missouri. Just Google Road Ranger St. Robert, Missouri, and you'll get directions there. Tough Tested has product demos there. Of course, some really cool prizes as well. They're going to be handing out Tough Bucks to redeem in store. And George and Wendy Parker, who drive the Tough Tested Power Sled, of course, are going to be there. And they can also tell you about Pupzilla, that really cool rat cart that's on the back of the Tough Tested Power Sled. They had a great conversation recently with George about that. It's a really cool little, in fact, there's probably, safe to say, at times more conversation about Pupzilla than anything else. But you can see it all there at the Road Ranger location there in St. Robert, Missouri. And thank you to Four State Trucks for putting together the Tough Tested Power Sled, which is on the road with George and Wendy right now. Again, Road Ranger, this Saturday, Highway 28 in St. Robert, Missouri. Hang out with Tough Tested, George and Wendy, the Power Sled, and more.
866-90-RED-EYE, if you'd like to get in. A lot of people want to talk about the allegation against Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh and where this is going. As we have said earlier in the show, in case you just tuned in, Grassley made it clear that she has until her lawyers have until Ms. Ford's lawyers have until Friday at 10 a.m. tomorrow at 10 a.m. to submit what she's going to say, what her opening statement is, and her biography. And if it's not in by 10 a.m., the Monday hearing is off,
right?
And then the vote will proceed from that point. And then after that, there wouldn't be a hearing.
No, because Chairman Grassley made it clear on Wednesday that if the accuser is not there, then there's nothing for Kavanaugh to respond to in terms of any details of any alleged event.
And then the vote would take place,
right?
And if there's enough votes, he is confirmed, and therefore there will be no more congressional hearings. This thing is dead in the water. Maybe whether she'll decide to do TV interviews down the road is one thing. It would be interesting to find out what her motivation was. Because, as you and I said from the very beginning, the letter itself, which, by the way, Grassley hasn't even seen the unredacted letter in its original form.
Right.
When I read the letter, when any of us read the letter, from what I know in the media, I know that what I read was somebody transcripting what was in the letter, but it wasn't the actual letter.
Right.
Grassley's never seen, he's head of the Judiciary Committee, he has never seen the unredacted letter.
Right.
He's never got it from Feinstein to begin with, and he said, you know, I'd like to see the actual letter.
Right. Let's start there.
But the point is, if you believe if the transcript that we saw was right in the redacted portion where she said she wanted to remain anonymous, well, then where do you go? The only place, and this is the important thing, and this is what she can't, this is what Feinstein can't defend. The only way that you could say you can have anonymity for a part of this process is if you are willing, and this would have been on July 30th or August, whatever, we got the beginning of August, that we're going to contact the FBI. We're going to give them the letter, which, by the way, they have the letter. And they put it, they said we put it in as part of the file. Nothing much we really can do.
Mm-hmm.
But at that point, here it is. Okay, we're going to interview you. We're going to interview you. Now, that becomes part of the file. Now, is that open to the public? I believe it would be eventually. Freedom of Information Act, you'd be able to get it. So if she wanted anonymity, what did she want?
What was she looking to get at?
What was she looking to get? Because the only way you could guarantee anonymity for a particular length of time would be the fact of you did the investigation. It's part of the thousands of documents. The FBI interviews you. They try to interview, they would interview Kavanaugh. They try to talk to some of the other witnesses, who I'm assuming would say the same thing, and they would simply present it to the Judiciary Committee at that particular point, and they would have moved on from it.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was no information, there was no witnesses. Now, the only thing that you could hope for is with the thousands of documents, the media, you know, wouldn't see it, and it's just not brought up once he's confirmed. Nobody cares anymore. It's a non-issue.
Right.
That's the only thing that Feinstein really could have said to her if you want confidentiality. But to begin with, you get a letter like that, it's like, I don't know what you want. Right? I don't know what you want.
Right.
You're not going to get anonymity. You're accusing a nominee for the Supreme Court of assault.
Mm-hmm.
Of sexual assault, attempted rape, whatever the charge would actually be in the state court. So if you're making that claim 36 years later, somebody's going to find out. And when we talk about the leak, who could have leaked it?
Right.
Republicans couldn't have leaked it. They didn't have access to anything. Only the Democrats did. So was the intent of Feinstein ever to provide confidentiality, or any of the other Democrats that knew what Feinstein knew? Were they ever trying to provide anonymity to begin with? Or did they say, we don't care what she wants, we just want to use this as a political football when it suits our purposes?
Well, and that's exactly what this has played out to be, that this really was about the process, that this really was about justice for a victim. Then Feinstein would have moved forward with that and presented this to the FBI, also presented it to Senator Grassley to say, listen, we have the situation. She wants to remain anonymous. Let's have the FBI look into it and see if there's anything there, because I believe this warrants an investigation to the point, as a part of the vetting process, not a criminal investigation, but to the point that the FBI, and remember, this was July 30th, would have plenty of time to interview people to see if there's anything to this claim. So that could have been part of the vetting process. Dianne Feinstein decided it wasn't going to be. That was on her.
And from what we know, she alone made that decision.
Yes, because the FBI could have done that and kept the source anonymous.
Let us talk to Dina in Quantico, Virginia. Dina, hi. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Thank you so very much. I've got a hypothesis that kind of wraps up everything you guys were just talking about. So, and I teach political communications and political strategy. So if I go too fast, let me know. Basically, the idea is that if you put yourself in the mindset of a liberal woman, what do they think about conservative men? You guys are all misogynists.
Mm-hmm.
You're dogs. You're horrible people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, but specifically conservative men are abusers and everything else, rapists, the rest. So if you put your mindset in that mind, you're looking for victims, but victims don't want to come forward because this guy's powerful. So what do? You put it out there that there is a victim who has come forward. Now there's cover for a second victim to come forward. That's when they pushed Dianne Feinstein, said, released that there was a letter. Dianne was like, oh, crap, I've got to give it to the FBI now, right? Mm. So now it's out there that there is one victim, and they're hoping that a second victim comes forward. They don't come forward, so now we've got to give the story a little credibility. We leak her name. So now we've got the name of a woman out there telling her story, and they're hoping that more victims come forward, because the idea is that now we've got one victim. He must have done it to other girls. So where's the second victim? Where's the third victim? When you get 2 and 3 and 4 victims coming forward, suddenly they all come out of the woodwork because now they've got the cover and the bravery to come forward. The problem is there are no victims because conservative men are not dogs. You guys are not misogynists. You're not abusers, and Kavanaugh isn't either. He's a good guy. So they released, I believe, a fake story in hopes of fleshing out real victims that don't exist.
Well, here's what we know. No one else has come forward. We also know that this is one claim by one person. This is not a pattern of behavior. It is not backed by others who say, there were strong rumors. Although they came out, there was at least one friend of hers that said, well, she mentioned it years ago. But that is not, even that doesn't go to, that's not a strong witness. That's not also not a witness that you would use, and thank you for the call. It's not a witness you would use even in this setting, because someone mentioning it is not the same as that person, the friend of hers, being there when the alleged incident took place.
But I saw another somebody who knew her, who said, you know, that she believes that, you know, yeah, I mean, because everybody sort of knew each other, even if you didn't know each other, because they went to different schools.
Mm-hmm.
But there was basically, and she said, I think it was a small core of people.
Right.
So you sort of knew everybody, even if you didn't know everybody. It was a friend of a friend of a friend. And she said, yeah, they were at, you know, parties together, but she didn't have any information on anything
like that.
And she hadn't heard anything about it. But mm-hmm. she said, yeah, you know, people knew each other.
Right.
That isn't a witness.
Nope. Not a witness. Even if she had, if Ford had described something to a friend, let's say confided in a friend, if that friend was not there and didn't witness, something about that alleged event, you know, them going into a room together or anything, which again, still today, there is no one that essentially is backing up this particular event as Ford describes it in her claim.
Let's go to Nelson in Chicago. Nelson, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi, Nelson.
Thank you very much. Take my phone. My question is, like, this lady came forward and it's ruining this judge's life. He's trying to ruin this judge's life. What is the consequence on her if she's lying? What?
Nothing.
Because if not, anybody can come forward and say the same thing.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, politically, that's kind of what happens. I mean, you're not going to, in this case, you're not going to have Judge Kavanaugh go after her and sue her for slander. That's not going to happen.
Anyone can come forward and say that and get away with it?
Well, no, he could. Well, I'm not saying he couldn't. He could sue her if he believes, you know, that, and he does believe she's making a false claim about something and alleging that he did something that he didn't do, but he's not going to. That's the point. There's not going to be any recourse,
and
he's not going to sue her.
And being a public figure, he would have to prove malice in the situation,
right?
That it was done on purpose to destroy his campaign
mm-hmm.
and his campaign only. But he's not going to do that.
No, not going to happen. That's something that in politics they're just not going to take on.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eye's Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. We go to Barbara in Baltimore. Barbara, hi, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi, Barbara.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'm up late at night sometimes, and I always turn you guys on to WMAL.
Thanks.
How are you?
Good. Thank you. Good.
Well, anyway, I just want to say this.
Okay.
First of all, there is no theory. I don't think there is a theory. This was a this is a Hail Mary. 12 seconds left in the game. Everything's on the line. This woman has nothing. And Judge Kavanaugh is a brilliant man. He hired a very good defense attorney. And you know what? Her investigators have already got a book on this woman. I was listening to talk radio earlier in the evening. George Soros' money is involved in this. They probably know about her bank account. She's not going to show up on Monday. She's not going to agree to show up. She's lying. I am a survivor of an attempted assault, and I thank God every day. It happened in 1974, September, Savannah, Georgia, on Victory Drive, as I was walking home. I can tell you the date. I don't know the person's name, but I can tell you when. I can tell you where.
Well, and
she's
that's
lying. When
and
I
that's,
first heard it, I knew she was lying.
You know, I am the father of three lovely ladies, and I am also the grandfather of five. And I know that if there is something even slightly traumatic, and nothing quite near as traumatic as what you went through, or what Ford mm-hmm. claims she went through, has ever happened. I thank God and thank you for the call. I know that if it did, because if, when something even slightly traumatic happens, I find out about it because they run to family. They run and they talk about it. There are so many questions about her claim. And that was one of the big questions. Why didn't she go to somebody? I understand the whole, you don't want to tell your parents you've been drinking. But at some point, if you believe that there was an attempted assault, you do want to get your parents involved maybe a week later, 2 weeks later?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. Well, we'll know a little over 24 hours from now. I mean, if you think about it, 32 hours from now, we will know whether there's going to be a vote or not, because at 10 a.m. Friday morning is when Chuck Grassley said that Ms. Ford, Christine Ford, has to have her basically her opening remarks,
mm-hmm. prepared testimony,
her prepared testimony, and her biography to the Senate Judiciary Committee if she wishes to testify on Monday. So if it's not there, then the testimony doesn't happen Monday. Monday is the deadline. It looks like Republicans are now getting together, and especially with really nothing happening yesterday, and it goes back now to he said, she said in the 24/7 channels, and politicians coming out and saying ridiculous things like men shut up and you know that this is a white man thing, and it's we're back to ridiculous political rhetoric from the left,
right.
And so it yesterday to me really showed when I woke up. And I tend to judge the day by when I wake up to come in to do the show and look at all the news headlines after viewing them most of the day before I go take my nap before I come into work. And mm-hmm. I went, okay, this thing is stalled.
Yeah, yeah. When we were looking at this on Tuesday evening, when you had essentially her lawyers saying in the media, essentially that there was this prerequisite, there has to be an FBI investigation, and telling ultimately the media that she's not going to testify, she's not ready to testify on Monday. you knew that they were going to back away and that, that there was not going to be any testimony. You knew that they were setting them up. And this is, so if you think about the political tactic here, you come out, you say, first, because we asked the question, what, Sunday night, Monday morning? Is she willing to testify? Because she would have to do so under oath. Monday morning, it came out, yes. One of her lawyers said, she's willing to testify. Then all of a sudden, a hearing was set. Well, the tactic there is, first of all, you're claiming something you know can't be proven or disproven. And the burden is still, of course, the burden of proof is on someone making the accusation, someone who brings the charge. That's how it works. Whether it's a legal setting or not, you have that burden of proof. Now, politically, it is about believability, but the tactic here is that you present that and then you're hoping that the president will look into it and then maybe he will change his mind and he will withdraw the nomination, or Kavanaugh will take himself out of the nomination process, and you're hoping ultimately that's how it will go, or at the very least, you can delay it. So it was set for Monday, then all of a sudden she's not ready for Monday. And then it is about all of these challenges that they know can't happen. They know it's not going to change. They know Grassley is not going to say, well, yeah, we'll delay the process a few weeks. Let's just delay it until mid-November. That's not going to happen. They know that. And then they can claim, well, she's just a victim and she didn't get a chance.
Even though that would be an interesting day if he did say that.
Yeah, if he, well, it would be one of his last days in power because his political future would be over. Even Collins talking about this. Now, Collins is still saying, look, she should come forward. We want to hear it. But she's also saying it's disturbing here that this is happening, and that this claim is happening last minute. When you hear that from Collins, you know that this isn't going over well. And this is all about the hardcore Democrats, the ones who were a no vote to begin with, that are not going to change their vote regardless. They're the ones who are making this circus happen. We knew it was going to be a circus. The circus is going on a little bit longer because they're accommodating. As you mentioned a couple of times, Gary, in your opinion, and I agree, this shouldn't have been done publicly. If she wants to speak with the committee behind closed doors, then let that play out. Let the committee decide. And then if the votes happen the way the votes happen as a result of that, then that's the process.
But they've offered that. They have offered
And they've offered that still. And Ms. Ford still has the ability, if she gets with her lawyers, prepares the statement, and gets it to the committee by 10 a.m. on Friday, she can have her say-so.
One of the things, and we had mentioned this yesterday, and you know, we've talked about the number of different demographics that exist out there politically. I believe that a couple of weeks after, maybe it was a couple of months after the Trump election, I can't remember exactly what it was, but we actually did a show where we said, we took the breakdown of the people, the eight different demographics that we believe voted for President Trump. One of the demographics that didn't vote for Donald Trump were the never Trumpers. Mm-hmm. Many of them who are conservative or conservative moderates who just can't stand his tone. And still today, they are furious about the tone. And if you go on social media, you will see the tone and the words he used are what makes him unacceptable.
Yeah.
But one thing that you and I talked about is universally, except maybe for the most absolute originalist constructionist who looked and maybe were suspicious at some of what Kavanaugh has ruled on before, really universally he's been accepted. I saw a ton of Never Trumpers who said, okay, I can't stand Trump, but Kavanaugh's a great pick. We have to stand by Kavanaugh.
Mm-hmm.
What I have seen over the last couple of days, and I knew this would probably happen, And I wonder if this is what you're seeing, for example, even with Collins and Flake, whatever, that they realize that as much as they dislike Trump, that what they have seen out of Democrats has put the fear of God in them. I mentioned to you yesterday a few never-Trumpers that I know. I can tell that they're having second thoughts, and it's all over Kavanaugh. Because just a couple of weeks ago, they were railing against Trump. And I think now I sense that they believe now that the Kavanaugh appointment, and they view Kavanaugh as a very solid pick, and are very pleased that that's who Trump chose. And I think it comes down to a lot of people now, and they're starting to think about it 2 years into it. I still can't stand Trump, is what they're saying. I can't stand the way that he talks. I can't stand the way the things, you know, the language that he uses, the disrespect that he has, the possible prejudices that I believe that he might hold. I'm not talking about myself. I'm talking about some of the never Trumpers.
Right.
But these Democrats are just completely insane, and they will do anything, and they will destroy anybody anytime. And even though at times they have backed the attacks of the left on Trump, it's almost as if Kavanaugh was a line that they didn't expect the Democrats to cross.
Right.
Now, I believe that they were naive to think that way to begin with. I'm just stating what I've been observing. And I really wonder if this has helped. And I don't know. I mean, again, to predict what 320 million people think at any one time is impossible to do. But I just wonder if this has helped. I wouldn't be surprised if this, the Kavanaugh appointment and what has happened over the last couple of days has helped expand the Trump base in a base that has not been expanding over the last 2 years.
Right. Yeah.
But right before a midterm election, even if he is nominated, whether there it still will be a huge motivation for many never Trumpers who might have been a little bit dispirited with the direction that they believe the Republican Party is going, to put a little bit of the fear of God in them to say, okay, I wasn't thinking of voting, but now I am going to vote. Whether it will help motivate the base, the Republican base, even part of that Republican base that was not pro-Trump, that is the never-Trumpers.
Right.
Again, I was just surprised by the number of people that I know on social media who seem to have not softened on their criticism of Trump, but seem to be furious at the Democrat response over Kavanaugh.
And I think it is one of those, I mean, this wouldn't be the straw that broke the camel's back, but it would be maybe the bale of hay that finally broke the back, because it's not small, but it is part especially of a recent string of events. And I keep bringing up the Lanny Davis situation with CNN, because that kind of dishonesty and cooperation, that is a real conspiracy. That's something that was put together by a number of people in order to build and continue a false narrative, but to build and give new life to a false narrative. Remember on the whole Cohen thing, when it was believed that there is something, according to his lawyer, there is something big that we have for Mueller, and there is this. And so you have all this false narrative here that has been going on since the beginning, but now has new life, like it's about to come to a head. That kind of dishonesty, not by one person, but by an entire organization and group of people that work together to put the narrative together, is part of the worst in terms of the actions. Forget about everything you see on social media. Even forget about the stories where they get it wrong or they have bias. This was about going out and creating a new set of lies altogether. not getting it wrong and spinning something a certain way. That's very different, and that we can compartmentalize and recognize very quickly. But it was about anything but the truth. So when you look at a situation like this, I think people going into this probably were suspect of the claims by Ford. The timing of it, first of all, and then Monday morning, it gained new attention, right? New, I guess, ground, if you will, when her attorney said she's willing to testify. Then Tuesday night, it crumbles. 36 hours later, all of a sudden, it starts to die away. And people look at this and go, no, we know how to compartmentalize this. We know exactly what this is. This is a hit job on somebody's reputation. Because if there was an injustice, then Dianne Feinstein should have brought it to the attention of the committee, the chairman, Senator Grassley, and the FBI the moment she got that letter on July 30th. She could do that and protect the identity of the person making the claim and have the situation vetted. And she chose not to do that. Grassley kind of defended her on Wednesday, you know, saying, well, she didn't have any kind of, you know, bad intent here. Yeah, she did. It's called political motivation. And you're talking about a man's life. You're talking about his reputation. But forget about his professional reputation or even his chance to be seated on the highest court. This is a man who now has to, every day, look at his family and wonder if they, in the back of their minds, have a question about who he is. He has to sit down at a dinner table and look them in the eye, and he has to wonder if they have one little spark of doubt as to his integrity and his personality, his being, his entire life, as he's lived it with them being a family together. I can't, as a father, I can't tell you of anything more frightening than something like that. Forget about credibility in the political arena. Forget about your chance at a what would be his retirement job, being seated on the high court. It's being seated in front of your family and wondering if they believe you.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Let us go to Ken in Dallas, Texas. Ken, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio as we talk about the allegations against the Supreme Court Justice nominee Brett Kavanaugh. Hi, Ken.
Hey, guys. Hey, I think this is going to backfire on them for sure. I'm not worried about the nomination. But what I want to touch on is, I feel like Feinstein, as a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, she should have told everybody she had this knowledge. I think she was obligated to tell them, and she withheld that information. You know, is she going to be, I don't know if it's an ethics violation or if there's actually a legal, you know, something yeah. she's done legally. Maybe she needs to be... Maybe they need to put a little heat on her, hold her feet to the fire.
Well, you know, while Grassley kind of defended her and said he doesn't believe it was ill intent, he did say on Wednesday, and I am paraphrasing, that it was wrong and she should have come forward. I will say this, and I don't know about what, you know, what likely they're not going to do anything official, you know, except for maybe wag their finger maybe during the hearing process or the voting process. I don't even know if that would happen. However, you are right, because you have to ask yourself, what if the claim were not attempted assault or something of this nature, but it was more serious? What if it were that, you know, that that they assaulted her, you know, over an hour's period, and she wasn't able to get away, and it was more serious in nature that rose to, you know, a very serious crime. Wouldn't people want to know about that? I mean, if that claim were there and there were tangible evidence, you know, something where she could back that claim, then, and it were substantial, then I think it warrants a review at that level and at that time when Feinstein was made aware of it. I mean, you have to look at that and say all of this began with her, with Feinstein.
Absolutely.
There is no way around that. She did not do anything about it. And that's honestly, for those who believe that there should be a delay here, you need to point your finger at Dianne Feinstein. End of story. For VDO Roadlog, here's your forecast.
Record river flooding will continue across the Carolinas for days, even weeks, as Florence's rainfall makes its way through area river systems. The greatest area for rainfall today, the upper Midwest and northern plains. From just east of Helena, Montana on I-94 through north and south Dakota up through Detroit, so mainly north of I-90, we'll see heavy bands of rain as a warm front pushes through. The Ohio and Tennessee Valley today will be dry, the eastern seaboard drying out after Hurricane Florence, and the west coast will be dry. Finally, from Tucson, Arizona to Tallahassee on I-10, we're looking at a chance of rainfall today, and the greatest amount of rain will be around the Carlsbad area in New Mexico. In fact, we have flood warnings out for the desert southwest in Arizona, New Mexico, and parts of western Texas. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. You see the cold front that's going to be moving in?
Like, I know.
Middle of next week.
We're supposed to be in the 50s at night.
Here in Texas.
Wow.
Agent Provocateurs, Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley, I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. You know I'm a little bummed, right?
Why is that? Why are you bummed?
Hanging up the golf clubs for like 2 weeks at least, maybe longer.
Or are you protesting? You quitting at halftime here? What are you doing?
There's too much kneeling. There's too much kneeling in golf.
Yeah, exactly.
No, the sciatic nerve is acting up. So I've been. You actually told me about some of the exercises, and they worked very, very, very well. And
yeah,
and I felt so good. I went out and hit golf balls yesterday, hitting them better than I've ever hit them before. I mean, just killing it.
Yeah.
And then 10 minutes later, I'm like, oh man, it's like I've got to hang it up for 2 weeks to a month to see if it just, because the I'm fine now, and as you said, it's not that bad for me because you saw me after I did the stretches, and I've been walking all over the place for some reason, even though I can hit the golf ball 5 minutes afterwards, and I can ride the bike, and the bat actually helps. I ride the bike, swim, those things, it all helps, and I realize, okay, whatever is down there, I got to let heal.
Yeah, give it time.
So I'm bummed.
Yeah.
Because the cooler weather's coming. And then, by the way, that cool front, what, coming in like Wednesday of next week, here, I know in Texas, it's going to hit sooner in the Northeast.
I was watching it at the Weather Channel. This was actually on the app during the day on Wednesday. And they were talking about this cold air that's going to be moving in next week, coming this Canadian air that's coming through. Another reason we should build a wall on the northern border. Keep that Canadian air from coming in. we welcome it, especially when you looked at some of the temperatures recently, even, you know, in the Midwest and other parts of the country that often are a little bit cooler than they have been in recent days, have been in the 90s. I mean, they're going to be getting that air before we are. But the fact that we'll be getting into the upper, maybe mid-50s next week, mid to late next week. That's a good deal.
From the 90s that we're still seeing now.
Well, I went into the mountains on vacation and, you know, at elevation, and it was, you know, not the highest elevation I'd ever been to, but 6,000 or 7,000 feet. And at night, I mean, it gets pretty cool. It wasn't the forecast was adjusted as I was arriving there, and so it didn't get as cool as I wanted it to. It was supposed to get down to freezing the last night I was there, and it didn't. It got down, I think, to 45 or something. But yeah, I don't mind a break from the heat. We've had a, you know, it's Texas, so we've had a, you know, long summer as always, and I like a break from the heat. I like the warm weather because I like to be able to get out.
Mm-hmm.
But yep, I'm ready. For
you've
it.
Had a, you've had enough. You like it, but
well,
you've had enough.
No, it's that I like a break, and then I you know, the perfect temperature is anywhere between, for me, anywhere between 85 and 90.
Mm-hmm.
But we've also had humidity and a lot of rain lately.
Yeah, we have, but you're like me because I think it was right after Christmas vacation last year. It was in January.
Yeah.
And we get cold weather January and February.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
It can get down into the teens.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it doesn't often, but it can. But it was, you and I were the same. It was like first week of January last year.
I'm ready.
We're done.
I'm ready for spring.
Back to the hot weather.
Right after the first of the year, I'm ready for spring because I just want to get outside. Yeah. I don't like staying inside much. Looking forward at least to some free air conditioning next week.
You know, something on the whole Kavanaugh thing that I just assumed, because there are so many questions that you could ask and so many questions that aren't answered. Mm. I just assumed that by this time that Chuck Grassley had seen the letter.
No, I assumed that he had reviewed it as well and that it had been discussed with Feinstein.
Only the unredacted text is what he has seen.
Right.
And he said, I want to see on that.
And somebody transcribed that, really, right? I mean, that was really a transcription of the original letter, wasn't it?
Right, because it was redacted. Yeah, well, the what I saw in the press was, I don't know if what they got was the redacted letter or the, you know, and I'm assuming they got the redacted letter.
Right.
Well, you know, her name was known.
Right,
At that point, we all know who she is, and here it is from Fox News. Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley on Wednesday unloaded a torrent of criticism on Senator Dianne Feinstein for her handling the sexual assault accusations against Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh, telling the ranking Democrat on the committee, I cannot overstate how disappointed I am, saying Feinstein chose to sit on the allegations until a politically opportune moment. Grassley demanded she immediately turn over an unredacted copy of the letter from Kavanaugh's accuser, Christine Blasey Ford, that Feinstein received on July 30th. I read that and I went, what?
Hmm.
I just assume those are the things you assume. Oh, Grassley knows about it now, Dad.
Right.
No,
right.
He still doesn't. He has not seen a copy. If you haven't seen a copy of the unredacted letter, you haven't seen
a copy
of the letter.
Right.
Feinstein shared the letter with federal authorities and other senators only last week before a key Judiciary Committee vote on Kavanaugh's confirmation. After the leak about the letter was published in The Intercept, Republicans have accused Democrats of orchestrating that leak. Well, they're the only ones that could have orchestrated the leak.
Yep. I mean, unless her people did it, which is not likely. It is possible, we do have to say that, but it's not likely. It's likely it was done by somebody on Capitol Hill, the leak. You know, this madness as it plays out, I think is wearing on the American people. Going back to you were saying earlier, and I agree, the president's base is likely growing as a result of this. Does it mean that the Republicans will retain the House? We don't make that prediction. But when you see the behavior from the Democrats and you understand the lengths to which they will go in order to block this president, you know, and the new Project Veritas videos coming out of a worker at the State Department saying, no, the idea is to stall everything, do everything you can as an activist. It reminds me of, you know, the whole Fight Club thing. You know, the whole Tyler Durden thing that, you know, everybody you run into is part of it, right? There was an article, I've got to find this, I've been searching in recent days since the Project Veritas video. They started talking about it, and it came out from the State Department worker. But there was an article that I read months ago about actually, I think it may have been in 2017, about the number of people that were put into place in positions that were not Senate confirmation positions. They were not even high level of authority positions, except that they had influence and decision-making authority on small things. Well, collectively, if they're part of the bigger picture, after learning about Strzok and Lisa Page and all of this, you understand now, if you don't, you're just ignoring it, you understand the levels to which they will go and in their activism, on their job. They are sworn to do something and work for the American people. You know, it's funny. The who was it today that said that the FBI? Oh, it was Brennan. He says the people of the FBI did not swear their allegiance to Trump. They are working for the American people. When they were sworn in, they swore that they would work for the country. And I thought, well, that's odd. Did Strzok take that same pledge? Because the point he was trying to make is that the FBI, on the whole declassifying the information,
right,
that the FBI needs to fight this every step of the way. Now, coming from Brennan, that's not surprise.
No, we understand.
No, yes. Surprise. We know. Yes. And there's theory, and I think it's a very sound theory, that maybe he was one of the key players, if this indeed rose to a level of a massive abuse of power under the current administration. But that activism is alive and well, and it's people that were in considerable levels of power, and it is also a number of people that are leftovers from the last administration that, again, were just hired, they were appointed, but they did not need Senate confirmation, and they are not names that you would know.
Well, the problem with what Brennan is saying, the reason that he is so inaccurate, and it makes it easy, and he's got, I'm sorry, but Brennan, the fact that he was the head of the CIA just blows my mind, because that is a childish argument that he has given, because Trump is not requesting the redaction.
No.
The unredaction, excuse me.
Right.
It is the people's representatives that is demanding it.
Right.
And they will be judged by the voter, by what is in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's making it Trump against, that's the only way he can do it, to try to make a salient point, is that, well, we need to fight Trump. You're not fighting Trump. This is Congress.
Yep.
This is Congress telling the president, we need to get this out to the American people. Well, we believe it might be a mistake. Fine. Then the American voter will deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And the Republican Party, if they do the wrong thing here, will be held accountable for it.
Yep.
But it is not between Trump. It's not between doing the right thing for America and Trump. It is the people's representatives who have oversight, authority over these departments. In fact, it is Brennan. If you want to bring up the F word, the fascist word, which is we're not going to follow what goes on in the government. The accusation's always been thrown at Trump that he wants to be a dictator.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see anything, whether the executive orders he has put through, anything, there's no sign. At times, he may say things that come across as
he issues opinion as to how he thinks things should go.
But what he's actually done is not there whatsoever. What they're actually doing Mm-hmm. What a Brennan is telling people in the FBI to do is you save your butt and you save my butt, and you don't do what the people's representatives are telling you to do.
Yeah.
You fight the people. And the only way he can make the argument is saying this is Trump against the country, which is pure garbage, and he knows it. If anything, Brennan's trying to CYA big time on this, because it's not Trump.
Right.
It's the people's representatives who are on a committee that has oversight over an FBI that they are telling the American public might have broken the law in getting a secret warrant. Now, I'll take that argument anytime about, I'll take that argument with Brennan anytime he wants to have that argument or that debate, because he's dead wrong. I believe that most Americans want to know if there's abuse when we allow the government to have the ability to get a secret warrant on an American citizen, which is an exception to the Constitution because of national security. And we believe that they said evidence was one thing and it was another. That it was intelligence, and no, it wasn't intelligence. It was from the opposition party. If there was a bogus FISA warrant, and that's what the Republicans are claiming, and they want the American people to see it, well, that's not Trump against America. That's elected representatives of the people making a serious accusation against the FBI, which we know got political.
Yep.
And we'll judge it by the results of what is eventually unredacted. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Front Eye Radio. He's Eric Carley. I'm Gary McNamara. We'll get to all your calls and comments coming up following the top of the hour. I just had to mention something because I just thought about it with all the stuff about Trump and collusion. Yet last week when we were on vacation, John Kerry publicly stating that he's colluding with the Iranians, the country that's still the world's largest exporter of terrorism. He's not a part of the government, and he's colluding with the Iranians, saying, okay, wait till Trump gets out. Wait till Trump gets out. You can wait this out. You can wait this out. He's giving advice to the country who is the world's leading exporter of terrorism not to do, you know, not to do to, you know, what the U.S. government is, you know, don't cooperate with the U.S. government.
Right.
As it currently exists. He's absolutely colluding.
And he's not part of a transition or team like Michael Flynn was on December 29th, 2016, talking to that Russian ambassador saying, you know, about what to expect with the Trump team.
Right.
That's not what that is.
Right. And it's a nothing story to the media, really. Nothing.
Yeah.
I just had to bring that up.
Yeah.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.